This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'll tell you, I am fired up today because how about them Bears?
Dan Wiederer.
Your boy Dan Wiederer was on the radio last week with Speaks. Mm-hmm.
Bears beat reporter and enterprise writer for the Chicago Tribune.
We'll mention this mainly because Chicago Tribune writer Dan Wiederer said we would mention this nugget.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast.
You described your emotional swing of anticipating a game when you kick there and then it's blocked and you're walking out of here as a loser.
Yeah, not a loser.
Dan Wiederer.
His name is Dan Wiederer. Wiederer time.
Bears.
The Take the North pod. Dan Wiederer talks football with you. Huh.
This segment with Dan Wiederer is brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS. You hear Dan on the Take the North podcast with his partner, who I have stolen for the day. His name is Mark Grody.
Hi.
I am Matt Spiegel, and Weedsy joins us right now. What's up, Dan?
As always, I am pleased to be here. How are you losers doing?
not a loser, but thank you.
It's so funny. Dan and I were talking about this. Like, I had an opportunity to clean up my question the other day. I don't even remember what it was, but I posed it sort of awkwardly.
It was to Kevin Byard. It was something. What did you ask him? But he definitely called you out on it.
Oh, it was to ask if Jaquan Brisker. I posed it as, look, I know this is a touchy subject. He's got a concussion and all this, but do you think he's going to play again? And he's like, what do you expect me to say based on everything you just said? And then I cleaned up the question. You, Dan, did not have the opportunity to tell Caleb Williams in that moment that he's not a loser.
It reminds me that I have
not a loser.
I kind of laughed in the press conference when he said that, and I haven't really circled back with him yet, which I probably need to do to say, I hope you realize I wasn't calling you a loser. You lost the football game in a very heartbreaking fashion.
Frankly, that just seemed like a healthy reframing for a young man who wants to stay positive and not delusional. What do you think?
For sure. Yeah, no, for sure. And I appreciate his engagement within those press conferences, both during the week and after games. He keeps himself kind of right there with the questioner. And I think that's a very mature way to handle it. He's been really good in that regard. Now he's got to be really good Sunday afternoon against the Vikings defense. That's going to present many more challenges than my clunky questions.
So, dude, I didn't bring it up, you condescending piece of crap.
Oh, God, I didn't say that. Nor did I hit that button. Dan, let me ask you a big picture question here about Caleb. Okay. It's theory that I've posited a little bit this week. I think ultimately when we look back on the failure of Poles and Eberflus and Waldron in creating the right incubator for Caleb Williams, and no matter how the season ends, they failed in creating that. It's pretty damn clear that there's some culpability for Caleb, even if he comes by it honestly, of just being a young, very confident dude who has a little bit of fake it till you make it in his personality, instead of saying, wait a minute, I can't do that. Like, just, I don't know what to call it, a lack of humility. I just want to call it, you know, the healthy arrogance of being 22 years old. The coordinator or somebody is supposed to say, wait a minute, you can't do that, kid. And Caleb strikes me as a guy who's not going to say, I can't do that. And that dynamic was lacking in the relationship. What are your thoughts on that?
I would say give me another 4 or 5 weeks on this one, because I'd like to see how he functions with Thomas Brown as his play caller, with their relationship evolving, with the way the offense kind of felt like they were in a much more efficient headspace and operational space last week against the Packers. If that sustains itself, then maybe this other stuff is just kind of outside theory. I'm not discounting it. I would like to see more inside a fluid system that has everyone's belief before we get to a point where we try to figure out how everything got off the rails, you know, in a 3 week period. Because guys, we came out of London talking about a football team that had scored five touchdowns in back-to-back games for the first time in Bears history in the Super Bowl era, right? So there was positive momentum, and then it just derailed. Obviously things were wrong before that to begin with, but there's a lot here for them to make sure that the momentum that was created, even in a loss Sunday against Green Bay, goes forward. And if they can, then maybe some of this other stuff becomes a little bit more moot.
Well, then that leads us perfectly, Dan, to this game against Minnesota. How do you think Caleb Williams will function against that blitzing defense?
I don't know, and it's my top concern, because fourth-year Caleb facing this defense may have all the answers right at his fingertips. Rookie year, Caleb may struggle a little bit. And I know you've talked about it, Mark, that you expect there to be an adjustment period that he's going to get through within the game. I'm not so sure yet, because Brian Flores does so many different things. And the Vikings themselves, just personnel-wise, have so many different chess pieces with the versatility they have with their safeties and their linebackers. And then we've talked all week about Andrew Van Ginkle and what he means to Brian Flores, a guy who followed him from Miami, to be here this year. And so there's just a lot he's going to have to see before the snap. And then, as I said a couple times this week, once the football's in his hand, he's got to solve a Sudoku puzzle with a timer on him, you know, and it's got to be, what am I seeing? Where's the answer? How do I get it there quickly? Thomas Brown has to give him good answers, you know, and Matt Eberflus said it's got to be simple. It's got to be defined. It's got to be efficient. And we got to try to give Caleb enough information without overloading him. The test of all that will come on Sunday afternoon.
You watch highlights of this Vikings defense, and it's terrifying from the quarterback perspective. Like, you'll see seven or eight dudes at the line of scrimmage, yep, and then sometimes only three, sometimes yep, four or five or six are coming. You never know how many, but they come from a different spot every time, and there's a lot of quarterbacks getting hit in the back, Dan.
And it's funny, because you mentioned the plays where they don't bring anybody, you know, and you're at the line of scrimmage and you're preparing, like, okay, I think the pressure's coming here. They may be sending a zero blitz, and then they drop eight. And then as a quarterback, you're like, oh God, you know, I was expecting to be heated up here, and all of a sudden all my receivers are taken away because they've dropped into coverage. Those can be as stressful as any of the other moments you've got. Sometimes, particularly with the playmakers that the Bears have, if you are a quick decision maker as a quarterback, those zero blitzes are great, because you see them, you know where your answers are, and you have one-on-one matchups that you have the personnel to win, you know? And so that's where I think it's going to be really interesting to see what the game plan that Thomas Brown puts together is. Matt Eberflus was asked today about that very horizontal approach that Luke Getsy took last year in Minneapolis. And we all talked about that for 2 to 3 weeks after it was over. And he said he'd like to see something, obviously, a little bit more diverse than that. We'll see what answers Thomas Brown has. And certainly his first performance against Green Bay was a step in the right direction. It wasn't spectacular, but it was a step in the right direction.
Yeah, got him rebooted, got him back to level, and maybe just a little bit over that. And whether or not he doesn't like the idea that it restored his confidence, because that would suggest he didn't have confidence before that. So he kind of poo-poos that idea. What about one of the other important parts of this game, and the Bears in general, and Eric Washington, the defensive coordinator? A lot of questions asked to him this week about how the Bears can better get to the quarterback. Tons of questions asked of Montez Sweat, who has just 3.5 sacks so far this season. Dan, is there a way, or is this what the Bears are stuck with this year? Just a low volume 25 sacks so far this season team?
Well, and in this particular instance, Grody, you have a matchup where you want to try to create the pressure with your front four and not have to rely on bringing extra people, because Sam Darnold's pretty good when you bring extra people. And he struggled a little bit when you're able to create pressure with four and make him, you know, play through some of the zone looks that you're giving him. Give a heavy dose of zone and see if he can beat you for 3 hours. You know, and we've lived it here in Chicago for really the last 7 years with Trubisky and Justin Fields, where teams would just zone them out and the passing game would get stagnant. They didn't have Justin Jefferson to throw to. They didn't have TJ Hockenson to throw to. But that can be a weapon against a quarterback. But it also relies on your front four getting home. So Montez Sweat has to have a game that marries up to the paycheck that he's got, right? We need to see him have an impact for four quarters in a football game, and hopefully he's able to get that done. And if they can, this Bears defense is certainly good enough to win them this football game. And you're just going to have to find a way to take advantage of a couple opportunities that may be there for you, and we'll see how they're able to handle that.
Montez Sweat is number seven among the highest paid edge rushers in the NFL. Just ahead of him at number five is Myles Garrett, who had three sacks last night, including a forced fumble. And Danielle Hunter is on that list. TJ Watt is on that list. It's a tough moment publicly for Montez Sweat, at least with the fans that I interact with. Dan, how culpable is he for the lack of production in your mind?
Well, look, like it's an adjustment when you become one of those elite guys in the league and you're seeing all the extra attention that maybe you didn't see in your first few years in the league. And you've got to figure out a way to win when you've got a chance to win. And you've got to figure out a way to take advantage of that attention you're getting to help free up guys around you. And so there has to be something within this Bears defense to get that pass rush revived again. That's why they paid Montez Sweat to be here for a very long time and paid him a lot of money so that he could have that impact on every single quarter of every football game. When you get those paychecks, what's expected of you is really, really high, you know, and so it's time to kind of meet those expectations and have an impact on a football game that can at least temporarily get your season back.
And unfortunately, guys, they never did find somebody, or not yet anyway, opposite of Montez Sweat.
They sure didn't. Yeah.
Which makes this even more glaring that, you know, one of my preseason predictions, guys, was that DeMarcus Walker would have a good season, because I talked to him many times, and he was always very specific with me when I would talk to him about his injuries last year. He said, yeah, dude, I wasn't healthy until through week 11, so he was ready to go. And I know that he didn't come to the Bears with massive sack numbers. I think he had seven the previous year, seven or nine, something like that, in Tennessee. But I don't know where he is. Dominique Robinson has not worked out so far for the Bears.
Dominique Robinson finally got some playing time. We've seen snippets of Daryl Taylor early.
Early.
And Jacob Martin
Dexter
lately.
Early. Well, what was going on early that's not happening now?
Dan, we haven't mentioned the name Austin Booker on this show. Maybe three weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks.
Preseason hero.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, you guys rattled off about five names there, and none of them were Austin Booker. And we thought that there was going to be a moment here where he could carve out a role, a very specific situational role for this football team, where he could have an impact because of his natural bend and the skills that he showed in July and August. It hasn't come together. And so at some point, you know, you got to figure out what's happening there, because that's a draft pick that you used on a player that you knew you were going to have to develop and was coming in pretty raw. But he hasn't had an impact yet either. No. And so there's a lot of guys up front that haven't had the impact that we thought they would, and as a result, you know, this very small margin for error you have as a football team has been exposed at times.
We have a lot to get to with Dan Wiederer. My goodness, here on 670 The Score, it's Spiegel and Holmes with Mark Grody sitting in for Lawrence. Before we get to your piece on Roma Dunze, which is awesome from today, Dave Wanstead last night on this show said that the Bears offense should not fall for the trap of not running the ball, that Minnesota wants to trap you into not running, because they'll do a lot of run blitzes, and they're really good on first and second down, and they want you to get off of this idea of running the ball. And now, that's part of that is Wani's DNA, but what are your thoughts on that, that the Bears need to stay committed to the run game, even if it gets stopped a little bit early on, that they got to stay committed on early downs?
I'm with him on that, and I think Thomas Brown is with him on that. And so I think there is something here that traces back to things we heard from Thomas Brown yesterday. I actually went back and watched Thomas Brown's press conference this morning, because after experiencing it in person on Thursday, I wanted to see, okay, like, let me just go listen to this a second time. And you felt like you were at a TED talk, right? Like just the command he had at that lectern, the way he talked about playing fearless football and staying in an attacking mindset, it marries up with everything you're saying here, Spiegs, in terms of being the aggressor, right? And making sure that you're not so worried about what can go wrong and how they might stop you that you forget about what can go right and what you can do to expose them. And so, like, that is something that players respond to, and they have responded over the last, you know, 10 days or so to the things that Thomas Brown has spoken. Now you've got to bring it to life again against an attacking Brian Flores defense that's also going to be ultra aggressive. That is 100% Brian Flores' DNA. And so you're going to have to find a way to win that fist fight.
Dan, we were talking before you came on last segment. We were talking a little bit about Rome Odunze and his development and how important the end of the Packers game was, coming through on the 3rd and 19 and then on the 4th and 3, both big time plays for that rookie. And you were writing about Rome Odunze. What did you learn from Rome Odunze?
There's a couple things that trace back to some of the reputation that he built up through his stellar season last year at Washington. And Thomas Brown echoed a sentiment this week in a conversation I had with him that Rome's coaches at Washington said is that, yeah, Mark, you've been around him. He's such a pleasant dude, you know, and you feel very, very comfortable every time you're in Rome's presence. But that competitive switch that he flips is nasty, right? And like the people that are with him are like, oh man, when the game is on the line, Rome gets this fire to him where he's like, give me the ball, you know, I'm going to go make a play for you. And it earns the trust of people around him. You've seen that trust build with Caleb. The fact that on 4th and 3 against the Packers in the final minutes with the game on the line, they decided to call a 4-vertical play, Vegas it's called in Thomas Brown's playbook. And Caleb trusted Rome to win his release and win, you know, when the football's in the air, and he did both. You know, he won off the line right away and he went and got the football and made a play that, you know, if they had made a field goal, it's the only thing we would have talked about this week.
Yes.
I mean, it's literally the only thing that would have been on these airwaves for the last 5 days.
And I would have said the next play, too, the blitz beater to Keenan.
Yes. 12 yards.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Those two
but
plays.
That whole last drive would have been a week's worth of content, right?
Yep.
And we would have squeezed the most out of it.
We didn't get there.
It would have been a lot of fun.
We didn't get there, did we, Dan? We were still cleaning up this week at the Hall.
But if you want to take this huge picture lens to this thing, you've got a rookie receiver who's finding his footing. He's developing the core chemistry with the quarterback that he's supposed to be around with in for the next 7, 8, 9, 10 years. And you've got some really cool things happening despite the losses at the end of the day. And there were some obviously on that final drive Sunday.
Cleaning things up at the Hall.
That's what we do.
These are a couple of kids in the Hall.
Kids Grody in the Hall.
And Weedsy.
That's right, man. You could see us at all over the Hall. In the locker room, in the hallway.
How about the elevator?
Dan,
I heard that you were in an elevator with Mark Grody and the grandparents of a player of note, especially in this time slot. Can you share what you observed, sir?
I was a fly on the wall as Grody and David Haw interacted with Doug Kramer's grandparents in the elevator on the way down to the post game last week at Soldier
Field. Doug Kramer himself?
And when Doug Kramer's grandparents learned that they were in the presence of Mark Grody, the way they lit up was truly, truly something to behold. It honestly was. Like, David was smiling ear to ear. Grody was just basking in the glory of the whole thing. And it was a cool little moment there. What nice people they are as well.
Oh, my God. They were so nice. She was so delightful. And you left out the best part, because after she figured out it was me, she then went on to say, oh, yeah, you're the mini fridge guy too, right? And in the moment I said, yep, that's me, I'm the mini fridge guy.
The
mini fridge guy.
I'm
sorry, I just felt like we were having a moment and I didn't want to conflate things.
That's okay.
Yes. And they were wonderful.
All
wonderful people.
Personalities are the same at a certain point.
Yeah. And the dad looked like kind of like a super fan. He was sitting there, he was in a wheelchair, just kind of looking up at me. He said, okay, this guy. Yeah. Yes, total super fan.
That is phenomenal. And she said, you're the mini fridge guy.
Yeah.
So they heard the bit. We found the people that liked the bit.
They are the people that liked the bit.
That's it.
Yes, they are in the demographic, Shane. I think you asked me that. Yep, right in the middle of it. Perfect.
Well, maybe the high end.
Yeah,
the high end
kidding.
Of it.
Yeah.
But we appreciate them. Dan Weeder, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to find on a Soldier Field elevator.
No.
So,
enjoy the weekend, fellas.
See you, buddy.
All right, man, we'll see you. That's amazing. If people liked the bit briefly at the beginning, and then he handed the ball to the mini fridge, and the mini fridge fumbled, and the entire bit fell apart.
Like,
you could argue the whole season fell apart. That was fun.
He should never, ever touch the football. We just won't, because that would just be, especially now that Waldron is gone. Thomas Brown pulled that, and then he failed. It's like, whoa.
We saw him last week, though. Right? Did we see him leading?
No, I'm saying touch the football.
Right.
Have the ball handed off to him or thrown to him. Blocking is great.
I thought maybe that page in the playbook was gone, but he was out there and he led for Roschon Johnson, but
I got no issue with that.
He whiffed on the block. Tom Brady called him out for it.
How dare you?
Doug Kramer whiffs.
Doug Kramer's grandparents might be listening right now. How dare you go negative? I'm sorry, Mr. and Mrs. Kramer. I'm sorry from Matt Spiegel. I apologize at this very moment.
I didn't mean anything.
So uncomfortable, Spiegel.
I apologize.
No, but you're right.
To the Kramers and all Kramers and all fridge owners.
Go,
and,
Doug.
And mini fridge owners.
I love Doug.
When we come back, grown men frolicking like children. The bliss of watching that on your televisions last night. Let's talk about it next on The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.